Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, CEO of the Year. Awards honor 20 of the Triangle's top executives who have propelled the region's economy forward. And that's on the front page. The actual articles are inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline, Special Report, CEO of the Year, how 20 of the top executives in the Triangle have contributed to the region's economic growth and success. And first, there's an editor's note headlined, Inaugural Class of CEOs Handpicked by Peers. And this is written by Sugata Mukherjee. The 20 corporate and organization leaders of our communities mentioned in the following pages of this special report have one thing in common, foresight. They have the foresight of realigning their corporate goals and vision when things get off track. They have the foresight to come forward and lead projects and movement for a greater good. And they certainly have the foresight to keep their employees motivated to work for a shared goal. Perhaps that's why the majority of 50 CEOs chose these 20 individuals to be the recipients of Triangle Business Journal's inaugural 2015 CEO of the Year Awards. The recipients of these awards were not chosen by this newspaper or by expert judges in our communities. These winners were chosen by their peers, fellow CEOs. Initially, identified the 50 CEOs who were asked to participate in a survey, and chose the 20 CEOs they admired for their work at their companies and in their communities. The majority of the 50 CEOs participated in the survey and listed their top 20 peers. As instructed, not one CEO voted for him or herself. What you will read in the section are a glimpse of the accomplishments of these CEOs over the years and how they have played a vital role in transforming their businesses and our region with their thought leadership. My sincerest congratulations to all as we watch these leaders reach new heights of success and influence in the coming years. And while there are quite a few profiles, we'll read a couple of them. The first one, Ashley Christensen, company, AC Restaurants, owner of Pool's Diner, Beasley's Chicken and Honey, Chuck's, Jewel, Fox Liquor Bar, Bridge Club, and Death and Taxes. Age 38, birthplace Kernersville. First job, waiting tables at the former Lucky 32 restaurant in North Raleigh. When Ashley Christensen set out to open Pool's Diner in 2007, her first restaurant in downtown Raleigh, her goals were simple. Create a place where people wanted to eat, a place they could feel comfortable. Six more restaurants and a James Beard Award later, Christensen is still seeking ways to pleasure people with food and comfort as one of the busiest chefs, restaurateurs, philanthropists, and boosters for downtown economic development. Under no circumstances do I believe I am the best chef or the best cook in this area, but I do believe I'm part of a very special community that I enjoy working with that makes me want to be better. She told a crowd of well-wishers after being named Triangle Business Journal's Business Person of the Year in 2014. Christensen's inventive take on Southern cuisine has helped elevate her status to become one of the Southeast's top chefs. She was awarded the James Beard Foundation's Award for Best Chef Southeast in 2014, an honor in the culinary world comparable to the Oscars in Hollywood. At the same time, Christensen has built her own economic engine for downtown Raleigh as her business has grown. As of December 2014, she had close to 200 full-time and part-time workers on payroll at her five restaurants and bars in downtown Raleigh. That number will climb even higher with the opening of her newest restaurant, Death and Taxes, and her event facility, Bridge Club, that will share the same newly renovated building at 105 West Hargett Street. I love working downtown, as does our entire team, she says. The thing we get to do all the time is to be part of the community and create experiences that people want to be a part of and feel ownership in. Philanthropy is also just as much a part of Christensen's business philosophy as honey is to her fried chicken. She's been described as a philanthropic entrepreneur posing as a restaurateur. In 2014, Christensen helped raise more than $204,000 through food events in Raleigh and elsewhere that she was directly involved with, including benefit events, raising money for the Frankie Lemon School, the Jamie Kirk Hahn Foundation, CAM Raleigh, Share of Strength, and Southern Foodways Alliance. Christensen says she'll never forget the first dinner party she agreed to host benefiting the Frankie Lemon School, which raised $30,000 through a charity auction. "It blew my mind," she says. "It taught me a great deal about the impact we can make." And that was written by Amanda Hoyle. And next we'll read the profile written on Jim Goodnight, this one written by Lauren Onosorge. Company, SAS. Age, 72. Birthplace, Salisbury. Family members, wife, Ann Goodnight. Children, James, Susan, Lee. First job, worked at his parents' hardware store in Wilmington at age 12. Jim Goodnight, the billionaire CEO of SAS, isn't like most CEOs. He'd rather stay out of the spotlight, preferring his office, brightly lit and decorated with glass-encased geodes, instead of being in front of a crowd. He's built more than a technology company in Cary. He's built a microcosm. In addition to housing the headquarters operation for the big data company he helped found out of NC State University Technology, the campus is home to multiple cafeterias, a swimming pool, even a barber shop. He's created a world where his employees rarely have to leave. And the self-described approachable CEO is right there alongside them. It's a technology community that no one could have envisioned when Goodnight returned to the Tar Heel State to finish his master's degree at NCSU. Goodnight, who has said his first course in computer programming had him enamored, returned to the state after working on the Apollo project in Florida. At NCSU, he worked at what was called the Experiment Station, set up from USDA grants and centered on data analysis of agricultural data. From that project, SAS, then standing for Statistical Analysis System, was born in 1976, spinning out of agriculture to help customers in other industries, from pharmaceutical firms to banks to government entities. But the business is just one of Goodnight's passions. His other is education. Goodnight is an outspoken advocate for increasing STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, in schools. "The state needs to find ways to maybe give differentiated pay to our STEM teachers so we can attract and retain our STEM teachers," Goodnight says. Goodnight, who helped found Cary Academy, said on a recent panel, he added that it's easy for those teachers to walk away from education and get better paying jobs. "We do need about 10% more of the college areas to be in STEM areas." Goodnight says that even with all SAS has to offer, having won several Best Places to Work designations, it can still be hard to find qualified, high-tech talent. And without an uptick in STEM education, the future workforce won't be enough to sustain the innovation that's coming. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by Managing Editor Rebecca Troyer. Triangle on Primetime TV, a chat with producer of Love It or List It, filming here. Biz recently caught up with the production team of HGTV's Love It or List It, currently being filmed in the Triangle. The show selects local homeowners who decide whether to love their current home after a major makeover by host Hillary Farr, or list their home with help from realtor David Vicentin. Maria Armstrong, executive producer of Big Coat Productions, in charge of the production, answers a few questions. "How did you decide on the Raleigh-Durham area for the current season? What are the plus factors of the homeowner market here that work favorably with the show's goals? Any negatives and challenges of filming the show here as compared to Toronto?" "We picked the Raleigh-Durham area because it really reflects the HGTV audience and is also a growing market. There are no negatives to filming in Raleigh. The challenges are that we're just getting up and running and that the homeowners need to get to know us and trust us. The same goes for suppliers, contractors, and anyone involved with the show." "How long do you plan on filming here? Is there a possibility that you'll do multiple seasons on location in the Triangle? Are there other U.S. sites you're considering?" We plan on filming until the end of the year, and yes, we would consider doing more seasons in the Triangle. We're not looking at other cities at this time. Does the team have favorite restaurants? The entire Love It or List It team has been enjoying the unbelievable food scene in the Triangle, and we have shot at some of the great restaurants here. When in Durham, we have had many meals and parties at Mateo, Juju, Nana's, Nana Taco, Pizzeria Toro, Burger Bach, Vin Rouge, Dos Perros, Local 22, Six Plates, Full Steam Brewery, Bull City Cider Works, Scratch Bakery, Monuts Donuts, and Rise. In Raleigh, we have fallen in love with Oro, Beasley's, Pool's Diner, Buku, Centro, Garland, Bita Manda, Cafe Tiramisu, Stanberry, Mandolin, Trophy Brewing Company, Seaboard 18, J. Betsky's, and City Limit Saloon. In Chapel Hill, Crook's Corner, Lantern, and Calavera Empanadas. Further afield, in Holly Springs, we enjoyed the amazing Little Hen Restaurant, Allen & Son Barbecue in Pittsboro, and the Saxapaw General Store in Saxapaw. We are kept well-fed by our local caterers, Nation Catering and Core Catering, and have even enjoyed a party catered by the amazing American Meltdown food truck. We are happy and full. Kendall to step down as North Carolina Nonprofits Head. Jane Kendall, founder and longtime president of the North Carolina Center for Nonprofits, is retiring in November. Kendall founded the center in 1990 and guided its growth into a 1,500-member organization that serves nonprofits and foundations of all sizes in each of North Carolina's 100 counties. Before founding the center, she worked as executive director of the National Society for Internships and Experiential Education, working with K-12 and higher education institutions to build practical work experience and community service into the curriculum. She later interviewed nonprofit leaders while working as a Kellogg Foundation National Leadership Fellow and found that many nonprofits share some of the same struggles. That served as a spark for her to find a way to connect nonprofits with each other and get the training and information they wanted for governing and managing their organizations well. For 18 months, she worked out of her kitchen to engage more than 2,000 nonprofits throughout North Carolina in town meetings and interviews. She asked them what, if anything, they would like to do together as a nonprofit sector. Their grassroots input shaped the priorities for the Center for Nonprofits. "I am proud that 2,000 North Carolinians created the center," said Kendall. "Working with employees and volunteers and nonprofits is a great privilege because they believe that something in our society can be better than it is now. They act on that belief every day with passion and courage and continually invent ways to make a difference in the world." Dave Matthews stops at the Pit before Raleigh show. Singer-songwriter Dave Matthews in Raleigh for a May 22 concert with his band at Walnut Creek Amphitheater took time to take in some of the best in Triangle offerings during his visit. One of his stops included the Pit, home of traditional North Carolina barbecue. Biz also caught a glimpse of the band's tour bus at the Umstead Hotel and Spa in Cary. Thanks for visiting, Dave. Gail Roper accepts new opportunity in Florida. "They told me I could not leave until I at least knew Google Fiber was coming, so I did wait," laughs Gail Roper, Raleigh's chief information officer, hours after announcing her resignation from the post effective in June. While Roper says she's sorry to go, calling the decision a hard one, she's excited about the new opportunities that await her in the private sector when she takes her next job at Florida real estate and land development firm St. Joe Company. Roper will be directing the company's technology strategy. And in a section called The Hype, Triangle cities make headlines in recent national rankings. Number one, Rollsville is the fastest growing municipality in North Carolina, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Number one, Cary is the fastest growing city in North Carolina, with a population of more than 100,000. According to the U.S. Census Bureau. And at number five, Raleigh is the fifth most business-friendly city in the U.S., according to MarketWatch research. And now we turn to On Healthcare, written by Jason DeBruin. The first headline, Growth Chart, UNC Healthcare Charts 42-Bed Expansion Plan. UNC Hospitals filed a petition with state regulators seeking the ability to add 42 acute care beds at its Chapel Hill campus. If approved, UNC estimates it will cost the hospital $17 million and would be completed by June 2018. In a much smaller project, UNC also proposed to add 4 beds at the Hillsboro campus. In North Carolina, as in some other states, healthcare providers must seek regulatory approval to add services, though a move is afoot in the General Assembly to reduce those requirements. State regulators strictly control the services offered in any geographic area and determine to increase the available acute care beds in Orange County by 46. These acute care beds are the backbone of any hospital. For a hospital to admit a patient, it must have one of these licensed beds available, so having more beds allows a hospital to generate more revenue. The additional capacity would allow UNC to add beds for services that routinely are filled, including the Neurosciences ICU program. It also will replace some semi-private rooms with private rooms. New 43-bed psychiatric facility proposed for Wake County. Springstone, a national chain of private hospitals that treats mental illness, filed plans to build Triangle Springs, a 43-bed psychiatric facility in Wake County. These services are needed in Wake County and around the state. A top concern of nearly every hospital executive in the county, and really the state, is that mental and behavioral health patients clog hospital emergency rooms, sometimes for weeks on end. The proposed project would cost $15.8 million and to be complete in January 2018. It requires state approval through the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. UNC Hospitals expects nearly $100 million in capital next year. UNC Hospitals expects nearly $100 million in capital projects next year. In addition, it has plans to budget a 7.5% operating margin, below what it will likely finish this year, but still double the long-term target of 4%. System leaders expect the opening of the new Hillsboro Hospital to drag financial performance in the early going. In the latest financial report, UNC Healthcare projects it will end the 2014 to 2015 fiscal year, which ends June 30, with more than $3.1 billion of operating revenue and $112 million of operating income. The income is more than double what UNC had projected and comes on the heels of a year in which it posted a $30 million operating loss. Under new ownership, Raleigh's FastMed will expand to other states. With Raleigh-based FastMed Urgent Care under new ownership, expect the chain to continue its high rate of expansion and to move outside its two existing markets. Or as FastMed President Kyle Bohannon says, the company will continue its high growth mode and be moving aggressively to expand the brand of urgent care centers. To date, expansion has happened only in two states, North Carolina and Arizona. While he would not be more specific about new locations, Bohannon allowed that future expansions would happen in new states. The group currently operates 87 clinics and employs more than 1,100 across both markets. On May 21, FastMed exchanged hands from West Palm Beach-based private equity firm Comvest Partners to Abry Partners in Boston. The move gives FastMed access to a significantly larger capital base, according to Bohannon. And finally, in a section called Big Number, 18, jobs cut by Community Care of North Carolina, CCNC, the nonprofit organization that works with the state to manage its Medicaid population. Across the state, workers in the CCNC network help to coordinate the care of Medicaid patients. The $14 billion health insurance program that covers about 1.9 million North Carolinians, mostly women, children, and the disabled. The federal government covers two-thirds of North Carolina's Medicaid bills, with state taxpayers picking up the rest. In coordinating care, CCNC helps keep costs somewhat in check. An independent review found that CCNC saved the state nearly $1 billion in claims payments over a four-year period. CCNC receives a payment from the state per Medicaid member it oversees. Impending Medicaid reform and health care reform already taking hold around the country could mean less money flowing to CCNC, necessitating the layoffs, Dobson says. And in the On Technology section, written by Lauren Onasorge, the headline, Credit Suisse, Deutsche Bank to expand local presence. Two international investment banks say they're growing significantly in the Triangle. Both Credit Suisse and Deutsche Bank announced that they're doubling down on their local workforce, plotting big moves that mean more jobs. And in one bank's case, it means expanding into a new, yet-to-be-determined Triangle building. Investment banker Credit Suisse is planning a 25% expansion, one that will involve an entirely new space in addition to its current footprint in Research Triangle Park. Rob Shafir, CEO for the Americas, announced the move personally in front of the 1,600-employee local headcount May 21, while celebrating the firm's 10-year anniversary in Research Triangle Park. Credit Suisse expanded here as a response to the events of 9/11, Shafir says. The bank was looking to create another center outside of New York. But no one predicted how much they'd grow here, says site lead Jim Captain, who moved here with the expansion from New York. When you start these things, you have a vision that says you start small, he says. Then you develop into something bigger and better. But we are moving some really high-end jobs out of New York. This is a little bit better than we might have envisioned in the early days. Shafir says that as the firm is moving more high-end jobs here, it's exporting commoditized jobs with simpler functions to other parts of the company. The goal is to capitalize on the high-tech talent coming out of NC State University. Captain says the firm has multiple functions in RTP, everything from risk management to complex financial jobs. A little bit of everything, he says. And the new space, plans for which have not been finalized, will follow suit with jobs across the board. A site has been identified, but Shafir provides little details other than to confirm it's in the Triangle. Real estate professionals were working out space concerns, he says, and while the execs say the expansion will result in a 25% boost to that 1,600-employee roster, an exact time frame wasn't given. As soon as possible, says Captain. Deutsche Bank. Dan Minto, head of Deutsche Bank's growing and state-incentivized technology center in Cary, says the team is significantly growing its Cary headcount. While he declines to give a current headcount figure, against Deutsche Bank's policy, says a spokeswoman. He does say the company already hired the 431 employees it promised North Carolina it would have on the payroll by 2016. We have no hesitation that we'll not only be able to exceed those targets, but blow them out of the water, he says. Those targets include a $13.5 million investment in its Cary location, where the firm promised to expand its software development center. The company had 250 employees in Cary in 2013 when the expansion was announced. Dubbed DB Global Technology, the unit, created in 2009 in North Carolina, produces software applications for financial instrument trading, risk calculation, and other activities for Deutsche Bank AG. And the state, in return for the 2013 jobs promise, offered up to $5.55 million in job development investment grants awards. NetApp layoffs may affect state incentives. California data storage giant NetApp may not be able to meet the jobs requirements needed to net the $11.8 million in state incentives it's eligible to receive. That's according to local site lead Rich Clifton, speaking after confirming that the Research Triangle Park campus was among NetApp facilities hit by a company-wide layoff action. The company is making adjustments to prioritize investments to drive our growth and our strategy, he says. We are very confident in that growth and strategy right now, but a few adjustments were needed. Across the company, 500 jobs were impacted. He wouldn't say how many Triangle jobs were lost, but did say the company hopes to continue to invest in RTP. The company pledged in 2012 to create 460 new jobs over 4 years and to invest more than $75 million into a new research and development facility. The company was offered a state job development investment grant that could yield as much as $11.78 million in incentives for its expansion. At the time, the company had more than 1,400 employees at its RTP facility. As of October, the number stood at about 1,600. Clifton says the company has so far met its milestones, but can't say for sure if that will continue. We'll see where we stand at the end of that time, he says. Clifton points to the new global lab for engineering the firm opened at RTP as examples of its continued commitment to the site. And in a section called She Said It, the quote, "Continuing to diversify our investments should serve us well even in slow growth or volatile environments." And that's from Janet Cowell, state treasurer, reporting that the state's $89.95 billion pension fund reported just a 2% return in the first quarter. And finally, in a section called Big Deal, local impact of proposed charter Time Warner cable deal, $78.7 billion, Time Warner Cable's value in the deal, 6,000, the number of Time Warner Cable employees in North Carolina, and 1,800, the number of Triangle-based Time Warner Cable employees. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Transportation page written by Jeff Jeffrey. The first headline, RDU to develop 25-year plan. With most of its major construction projects out of the way, Raleigh-Durham International Airport is set to begin the first phase of its long-term planning effort that will chart the airport's course for the next 25 years. The Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority approved on May 21 a $3.98 million contract with Chicago-based Reconda and Associates to draft a master plan for the airport over the next 18 months. The contract goes into effect June 1. With Terminal 1 now finished, it's time we look to the future, says Airport Authority Chairman Dickie Thompson. This will allow us to decide how best to serve our customers through 2040. The plan will involve assessing the airport's existing buildings, parking structures, and airline services. From there, Recondo will draw upon aviation demand forecasts to make recommendations about renovating existing structures, building new facilities, potential revenue opportunities, and ways to better serve customers in the coming years. It will also include an implementation plan that includes a capital improvement and asset management program. Additionally, the master plan will include an assessment of the potential environmental impact. The cost of the master plan will be paid for using a $2.98 million grant from the Federal Aviation Administration. The state is expected to kick in $496,875. The remaining $496,875 will be paid for by RDU. Starting next month, the Airport Authority will host the first of 8 public hearings to consider feedback from the community. The first hearing will be June 29 in Durham, with the second being held in Raleigh on June 30. We want to make sure we're getting feedback from everyone, including customers and government officials, Thompson says. Last month, RDU began the final phase of the Terminal 1 reconstruction project, which will involve tearing down what's left of the old building. The project is expected to cost between $6 million and $7 million. Terminal 1 reopened last summer after a $68 million renovation and is primarily occupied by Southwest Airlines. Durham intersection to close as part of Raleigh-Charlotte rail project. The North Carolina Department of Transportation is set to permanently close the intersection of Church Street and NC 54 in Durham. Drivers will no longer be able to access the intersection as of June 8. NCDOT spokesman Mark Mueller says the closure is part of the Piedmont Improvement Program, which aims to upgrade rail transportation between Raleigh and Charlotte. Mueller says in a statement that NCDOT decided to close the intersection of NC 54 and Church Street in order to improve driver safety in the area. With the intersection closed, Church Street will be realigned to avoid an existing railroad crossing, NCDOT says. The department will create an alternate route to NC 54 by extending Keystone Park Drive from Park Knoll Drive to Hobson Road. The entire PIP project is scheduled to be completed by September 2017 to ensure the state is reimbursed under a federal grant issued by the Federal Railroad Administration. Earlier this month, state officials broke ground on Raleigh Union Station, a key facet of the PIP project. And in the He Said It section, the quote, "When there is a crash, as there inevitably will be, people are going to need to fortify their patience." And that is from Joe Malazzo, Executive Director of the Regional Transportation Alliance, on what commuters should expect as NCDOT moves ahead with the Fortify construction project on I-40 and I-440. Then under a section called Fortify Project, firms offered telecommuting as traffic workaround. With the North Carolina Department of Transportation set to close lanes along I-40 near Raleigh as part of its Fortify construction project, several local companies are offering employees alternatives to braving the commute each day. The companies that are offering flexible work schedules, transit passes, and telecommuting include Cisco Systems, Citrix, GlaxoSmithKline, IBM, NetApp, Quintiles, and Red Hat. And finally, in the By the Numbers section, expenses approved by the Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority during its May 21 meeting. $99 million. The authority voted to reissue a series of bonds to refinance two previous bond programs. The move is expected to save between $12 million and $13 million over the next 20 years. $3.98 million. The authority signed off on a contract with Chicago-based Ricondo and Associates to draft a master plan for the airport over the next 18 months. And $1 million. The airport will acquire a new fire truck within the next year. And now in the Business Triangle Business Journal, we move on to the A Better World page written by Todd Cohen. And we start with his column. Cohen also publishes Philanthropy North Carolina. The headline on this column, Fighting Poverty Starts with Youth. 6.5 years ago, after having served for 8 years as pastor at Williams Grove Baptist Church in Southeast Raleigh, Kirby Jones was frustrated at continuing to see children from the congregation involved in, quote, all the bad things so typical of inner city communities, unquote, including dropping out of school, getting into trouble, and even going to jail. Concluding that education would be the best solution to, quote, actually bring children out of the cycle of generational poverty, unquote. Jones says he launched the Daniel Center for Math and Science, a nonprofit that focuses on science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM, education. Today, the Daniel Center operates a licensed child care center that serves 31 children, ages 5 to 12, in space leased from Williams Grove Baptist Church. It also has a program for 12 teens that operates in space donated from Edenton Street United Methodist Church, and provides academic tutoring, visits to college campuses, job shadowing, and connections with community leaders. The Daniel Center also is part of a group of 7 nonprofits that for the past year has been developing a collaborative effort to help families lift themselves out of poverty. Known as the WAKE Collaborative, the group recently received a $7,000 grant from Triangle Community Foundation to support a plan to create a pre-kindergarten classroom at the Daniel Center that would serve 18 children, and to provide wraparound services to serve those students and their families. Linda Nunnally, Executive Director of Step Up Ministry Raleigh, one of the partner agencies in the collaborative, says poverty affects not only individuals and families, but the entire community. The poverty rate in Raleigh nearly doubled between 2000 and 2012, a pace that was third fastest in the U.S., she says. In the area, for the 27610 zip code, which includes the Daniel Center, she says the number of children living in poverty had grown 46% since 2008, and one in three households with children live in poverty. Poverty means poor health outcomes, high crime rates, high unemployment, failing academic performance, Nunnally said at a recent event when five partnerships competing for a $25,000 grant from Triangle Community Foundation. As one of the five semifinalists from among more than 50 that submitted proposals in response to a request for ideas for innovative, collaborative solutions to community problems, the Wake Collaborative received $7,000. The collaborative aims to provide a, quote, seamless pipeline of early care and education from birth to fifth grade, unquote, Nunnally said. Each family would work with a case manager and be connected to a coordinated system of supportive services, so it was actively engaged in their child's future, she said. Jones says a key goal will be to support more families and their children throughout their educations. The end game for teens, he says, is to see them not just graduate from high school, but be successfully enrolled in a two-year or four-year university. And in the nonprofit news, companies team up to preserve the planet. The first EarthShare North Carolina corporate challenge included 93 professionals participating from 10 businesses across the triangle. Volunteers planted 600 trees, picked up 550 pounds of trash, rerouted a trail to save endangered plants, and expanded habitats for tigers, among other projects. It was incredible to see companies and nonprofits come together to help the environment and make such a big impact on our community, said Heather Beard, Executive Director of EarthShare North Carolina. Participating businesses included SAS, BuildSense, The Design Studio, CEPI Engineering and Construction, Ag Biome, GNS Business Communications, and Sports Endeavors. NCSU students design a solution for Lenovo. NC State University Industrial and Systems Engineering, ISE, presented their projects for Senior Design Day. These projects are aimed at solving real-world problems for companies. The winning ISE project was for Lenovo's North American Fulfillment Center in Whitsett. The ISE team designed simulation models demonstrating ways to increase efficiencies in order picking, packaging, and loading to increase the volume of same-day shipping by 20%. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the executive voice, and this features Dave Rose. A closer look at Dave Rose. His title is President and Co-Founder of DSE Music Group, Family, Wife Melanie, Hometown, Washington, North Carolina. And the headline on this question and answer column, Music Industry Alive and Well in Raleigh, Deep South CEO Reflects on 20 Years in Business. And this is written by Jeff Jeffrey. When DSE Music Group President Dave Rose launched his indie record label in 1995, the first advice he was given was that he needed to move out of Raleigh. It will never happen here, his friend said. But two decades later, the record label has morphed into a multi-platform music production and band management company with a national reputation. The company just celebrated its 20th anniversary with a concert in downtown Raleigh, proving those early naysayers wrong in dramatic fashion. What was it about the Deep South that made you want it to be the brand of your various companies? When we were making our very first record, a college friend of mine named Andy Martin and I, we had no idea how to start a record label. There was no internet. We had one little southern comedy act by a guy named Buck who did prank phone calls and things like that. We thought, we think this is funny, let's put this record out and see what happens. But we thought it should have some kind of record label name so it seems more legitimate. Deep South seemed like it would work, well, for a comedy record. That record didn't come out until years later, but the first record you released exploded. How did that happen? We really approached it like we were making our own mixtape. We just started finding bands we liked. We were calling record stores and radio stations and asking them who was selling in the area. That's how we found the bands for the first compilation record. We ended up having a song called Sex and Candy by Marcy Playground, which ended up going number one in the world and was one of the biggest songs of the 1990s. Five acts from that first compilation ended up getting major record deals. So that kind of let me stay in Raleigh going forward. DSE Music Group no longer has a record label. What happened? We did two or three more compilations after that, but around 1998 we got a call from a guy who said they were starting a new company and were reaching out to indie labels. So we flew out to Silicon Valley and met with them. Turns out it was Napster. They were trying to get indie labels to embrace the idea that if bands gave away their music for free, everyone would win in the end. I remember leaving that meeting thinking, this is where it all changes. After that, we began shifting gears and began managing bands. We now do artist management, which includes every aspect of their career. It's what we do for Bruce Hornsby, Little Feat, Striper. We also do business management, which is focused solely on the business, finances, taxes, insurance, the boring stuff. Were there any challenges that came with being so successful so fast? When you have an early success, topping it becomes difficult. But you also have to remember that we had no business plan. We had no idea what we were doing. We were just putting a logo on the back of our mixtape. We didn't even know how to get our record into stores. The first compilation gave us incredible notoriety, but we didn't make all that much money because people don't buy those kinds of albums in the masses. It did get us off the ground, got us our first office, and got us out of the apartment we were working from. What were the biggest challenges facing your company these days? Or what are the biggest challenges facing your company these days? In 2015, the competition for music is not just other music outlets. It's Netflix. It's 700 channels and all those commercials. It's video games. The amount of time people have to consume music has even changed. We want one part of our business to be there regardless of where they're going to consume music. Some things never change. Bands are always going to need someone to manage their finances, and for as long as we've been a nation, people have been going to small bars to listen to live music. Our role is to make sure we're not in the payphone business when cell phones start coming out. What are you working on now? This summer, we have two free concert series in downtown Raleigh, which run every Thursday night. We're doing all of the production work. The first is Oak City 7, a multi-genre concert series that we have been doing for the past 4 years. The second is Pickin' in the Plaza. It started a year ago, which is all bluegrass and traditional music. Where does DSE Music Group go from here? In the past, we've always subcontracted things like lights, public address systems, things like that, but we've brought all of that in-house. We have also been tapped to be the production company for the North Carolina State Fair, so we'll be filling the three stages with talent for the fair, which is a huge honor. Do you ever get sick of music? You know, I don't. About a year ago, I sat down to write a practical guide to the music business for artists. Everything I know about the music business I learned from my cousin Rick. The real key is to make sure you're putting good music first. You can know everything there is to know about a record deal, but unless you're making music that's connecting with people in a way that they want to share it with other people, you're not making good music. And now we turn to the viewpoint page in the Triangle Business Journal. And first we have the viewpoint of Rob Schofield, who is the Director of Research and Policy Development at NC Policy Watch, which is affiliated with the North Carolina Budget and Tax Center. He can be on the headline on his column, North Carolina's revenue surplus isn't all that it may seem. There's been a great deal of debate in Raleigh about the revenue surplus the state announced earlier this month. To the right, the surplus is validation of the 2013 tax reform package. Indeed, to members of the Senate, the new projections were reason to crow about their triumph over Chicken Littles on the left. In contrast, some progressive critics attribute the surplus to the great tax shift from the 2013 reforms. In this narrative, the changes effectively raise taxes on millions of households by doing away with some deductions and expanding the sales tax. And that's all one needs to know. Put simply, conservatives have surreptitiously raised taxes on working folk and thereby padded state coffers. But both of these takes are too simplistic. With help from the fiscal policy experts at the North Carolina Budget and Tax Center, here are the five considerations of the surplus. The surplus is not a huge surprise or especially significant. Every year, economists in the General Assembly and the Office of State Budget and Management project revenue for a coming fiscal year. Their work has been made complicated by the tax policy changes. To avoid the problem of having revenue come in lower than expenses in such an environment, officials regularly offer conservative projections about revenue. That's what happened in North Carolina for this year. Happily, as in the past, they were slightly off, and the state received a modest April surprise. North Carolina also is far from the only state getting good revenue news. California has, Arizona has, Minnesota has. This makes sense as the national economic recovery picks up steam. Moreover, none of those states were afflicted with the kind of tax cut fever that has gripped North Carolina in recent years. Minnesota raised taxes on the wealthy, a move that has generated significantly more money for core services. There's no evidence lower taxes on profitable corporations and wealthy individuals created the surplus by spurring extraordinary growth. To the contrary, the data show the surplus was primarily the result of the national economic recovery and, in particular, a bump in income tax revenue from taxpayers who cashed in on capital gains and other assets from business income. The tax shift didn't directly cause the surplus. The reforms of 2013 raised taxes on many people in the middle and of modest means, especially in light of the recent uproar surrounding tax deductions and refunds. Income tax refunds fell 2 times faster than projected, the biggest drop in decades. It's not surprising some progressives conclude the 2013 reforms caused the surplus. The Budget and Tax Center, however, believes this conclusion is not supported by the data. Instead, it's the result of higher-than-expected capital gains and business income declarations. This point reflects another phenomenon. Most income growth in the country accrues to the wealthy. Revenue is still falling short. The Minnesota example shows North Carolina would have significantly more revenue to fund education, health care, courts, public safety, and environmental protection without the 2013 tax cuts. The BTC estimates this figure at around $1 billion. Indeed, if North Carolina took the same share of total state income and taxes that it did prior to the Great Recession, revenue would be $3.2 billion above the current level. Just imagine how much better equipped the state's core services would be today with such a sum. While better than nothing, the $400 million surplus pales in comparison. It's not enough to cover enrollment growth for 1 year in our K-12 higher education and healthcare systems. Add to this the likelihood that most of the windfall is likely to be in the form of one-time, non-recurring money, and the picture is sobering. Things are about to get worse. Under the 2013 law, the surplus will trigger another round of corporate income tax cuts. This will cost around $100 million in the coming fiscal year and $350 million the year after that. In other words, the surplus hasn't made things any better. It has given further impetus to the push from conservatives to completely eliminate corporate and personal income taxes. And also on the Viewpoint page, we'll read another viewpoint. This one is from Eugenio Alemán, who is a senior economist at Wells Fargo Securities. The headline on his Viewpoint column, Dining and Drinking Our Way to Recovery. U.S. retail sales have been in the news, and not because they're improving. Weakness continues in the good sectors of the economy, while the service sector, that is, food services and drinking places, is booming. This is where consumers are spending some of the money they're saving on gasoline. This partly explains why personal consumption expenditures continue to be relatively strong and driven by the service sector rather than by the goods sector. This boom in food services and drinking places also is having an important effect on employment. In April, non-farm payrolls grew at 2.2% on a year-over-year, three-month moving average basis. However, during the same period, employment in the food services and drinking places sector grew at a 3.8% rate. Since the previous employment peak, the sector has added more than 1.3 million jobs. Total non-farm payrolls have increased 3 million since the previous peak in January 2008. This means the food services and drinking places sector, on its own, accounts for about 45% of all the net growth in total payroll employment since employment peaked before the Great Recession. The fact that retail trade has the lowest average weekly earnings of all employment sectors has had important implications for income during the recovery from the Great Recession. This may be part of the reason why the recovery seems not to have benefited the overall economy. One caveat, if we make the comparison from the trough of employment during the Great Recession, employment in food services and drinking places accounted for 1.7 million jobs of the 11.7 million gain in non-farm payroll employment. In this case, food services and drinking places employment represents 15% of all employment created since the depths of the Great Recession. And in the Triangle Business Journal's People on the Move section, the spotlight is on Chip Galluli, Chief Business Officer, EDM Americas. After 10 years at Quintiles, where he last served as head of corporate development activities, Chip Galluli has been named Chief Business Officer at information logistics firm EDM Americas. He's been a consultant with EDM since October. In his current role, effective at the beginning of May, Galluli leads all of the Raleigh company's client-facing activities, such as marketing, business development, client support, and quality. He also leads the firm's inorganic growth efforts. EDM Americas employs a total of more than 500 people, about 100 of whom are located in the Triangle. The firm is helmed by its president and CEO, Scott Byers. What is one thing you wish people knew about your job? It's not about sales. It's all about solutions. What are some of your major goals in this position? Build an environment where people are excited to be a part of a team creating solutions to today's complicated information environment. Our clients need help managing a hybrid environment where some of their business intelligence is digital and some of it is still analog. We help manage and move that information in highly regulated environments. My job is to deliver solutions that meet those needs and enhance our shareholder value. How can I not be excited about that? Biggest pet peeve? Narrow-minded thinking. Biggest worry? That our country's political leadership has lost sight of their responsibilities and are participating in the polarization of a great nation. Leaders should have the courage to find ways to bring people together, not to place blame and divide us. Triangle business person you most admire? Bob Ingram, former CEO, chairman of GlaxoWelcome, and head of Hatteras Venture Capital. The man has the energy of three people, never forgets a name, and has the biggest heart of anyone I ever met. Education. Bachelor's degree in business from St. Louis University, MBA from Duke University. Personal. Catherine and I have been together for almost 16 years, and we have 4 children, John, Kristen, Craig, and Ryan. Last book you've read? The Last Lion by William Manchester and Paul Reed. And with our remaining minutes, we'll read from the 9 to 5 section, New Triangle Business Opportunities and Accolades. Trident Swim Shop is opened inside the Triangle Aquatic Center at 275 Convention Center Drive in Cary. The new shop carries swim gear for all types of swimmers, including swimwear, goggles, towels, accessories, and specialty team gear for the center's Titans swim team. We are so excited to serve the 400,000-plus patrons who visit TAC each year, says Shannon Hall, Senior Director of Retail Sales. With our unique partnership, every sale gives back to TAC Titans Swimming and the Triangle Aquatic Center. Trident Swim Shop is open to the public daily with extended hours during meet weekends. Raleigh-based Store Office Environments has been designated a 2015 Platinum Partner by Steelcase Office Furniture Company. To become a Platinum Partner, Steelcase dealers must meet criteria based on financial strength, community involvement, investment in personnel, and customer satisfaction. Only 25 dealers out of 400 are selected. This is an important distinction for Steelcase dealerships, says Tom Vandegoot, CEO of Store Office Environments. We are thrilled to achieve this level of success and continue to work hard to excel in delivering exceptional products and service to all of our clients. Apple Gold Group, owner of multiple Applebee's Neighborhood Grill and Bar franchises, received the 2015 Restaurant Neighborhood Award from the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association for the company's community service efforts in 2014. Last year, Apple Gold Group raised more than $1 million for the V Foundation for Cancer Research and about $2 million throughout the 7 states where its restaurants are located. And we'll stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.